Good evening.
And happy holidays. This is Alton Brown broadcasting from my offices at Brain Food Industries in picturesque Marietta, Georgia. I don't usually do an end-of-year podcast, but this year's a little different. So many people said, gee, 2016, you suck. And a lot of parts of 2016 did suck. We lost a lot of very, very good people. There was a lot of political upheaval. And no matter what side of that particular aisle you are on, you will feel the fallout from that next year and 2017 and beyond. So I think we're all ready for this to be over with. But lest we think that nothing good happened this year, well, I decided to put together a list of my list of very best things from 2016, ranging over a wide number of categories, from everything from best food blog to best hotel, the ingredient of the year, and the cocktail trend of the year, and a few things in between. So settle in. This will be my last podcast of 2016, and I hope you enjoy it. Please stand by for Alton's Best of 2016. This is the Alton Browncast. By the way, that little gap in there would have been where we would mention our sponsors, but we don't have any sponsors. The Alton Browncast is brought to you by me, Alton Brown. We have no sponsors. We'll have to work on that for next year. All right, stand by for the best of 2016. All right, welcome back. It is time for my best of the year list. I have to admit, I'm kind of making it, well, I'm not making it up on the fly, but I just decided to actually do a podcast of this material about an hour ago. So I've been keeping a list. I always do. I keep a list of the things that I think are the best of every year. I've just never shared them with anyone. So this year I've decided to break that mold and actually share with you guys some of the things that I think were exemplary in 2016. And I'm going to start with Food Magazine. There are a lot of them, okay? And I know that a lot of food magazines have a lot of fans. And in years past, I have certainly spoken out for magazines like Gourmet, which I still miss, and Saveur. But this year, like last year, only I didn't do this last year, but secretly in my head, I'm giving Food Magazine of the Year to Lucky Peach. Yes, it was born out of a place of kind of, I don't know, edible hipsterism, but Lucky Peach isn't just for the culinary cognoscente. Like a good pho, Lucky Peach manages to strike this balance of kind of the thoughtful and the useful. I mean, there are recipes, and well, they're by and large, the ones I've tried have been extraordinarily well written, and when, you know, executed properly, make some tasty food. I, in fact, use the handmade ramen noodle recipe every time I make handmade ramen, and I have to say that the honey jar jasmine rice pudding by, I think it's Daniel Bell. I don't know if that's one of their writers or just contributor. It's better than any rice pudding that I've ever made. The art direction is snappy. And though the tone is definitely chefy, it's never overwrought or condescending. I feel about Lucky Peach the way I used to feel about Cook's Illustrated back in the late 90s. I literally wait by the mailbox for it. That's a lie. I mean, I don't wait by the mailbox for anything but checks from Food Network, but I look very, very forward to it. Oh, and if you don't have a subscription, you can still go by luckypeach.com. It's probably the best culinary magazine website out there. Guys at Lucky Peach, keep doing it. And by the way, they also publish amazingly good books. Their vegetable cookbook was one of the best books of the year. And I think they did a book of like 100 Asian recipes that is like the Asian food that you actually want to make, which, let's face it, might not be very authentic. Most of us want food that tastes like takeout, which is exactly what that gives you. So Lucky Peach, keep it up. If you ever need anybody to, you know, host your TV show, I'm the guy. Next up, food blog of the year. Now, I'm one of those people that used to kind of scoff at food blogs. It seems like everybody had one. And usually they were just a place on the web to store badly written recipes or badly plagiarized material from other sources. I remember the day that a friend recommended a food blog to me and I went to it. And my friend had said, hey, you're really going to like it. I'm like, yeah, because I wrote half of it. I mean, it was like big chunks from one of my books just kind of copied directly into this blog. So I kind of have maybe a chip on my shoulder about that, but I've been trying to get better about it. And so I've looked at a lot of blogs this year, and I've decided not to only call out one, but two. I'm dividing this into a food blog run by like a major brand or outlet, and then a food blog run by a regular person. And so my first one is going to NPR's The Salt. Okay, National Public Radio. They do content very, very well. They have a lot of resources, a lot of reporters, a lot of writers, and The Salt really shows it. This, I'll be honest, I wish I had this blog. I wish my blog could be half this good. And just in December of 2016, they covered the history of the Mr. Coffee machine, which I have to tell you is fascinating, especially when you kind of look at it in contrast to where we are in the coffee world today. They also did a piece on the Hawaiian sugar industry, well worth reading. They took a look at marzipan and even Christmas Eve tamales, which, yes, is a thing. If you're not looking at NPR's The Salt, you should be. If you're a food person, I think you'll enjoy it. Now, when it comes to personal food blogs, or what we'll call, I don't know, brands based on one person, I technically have one. AltonBrown.com's technically a blog or contains a blog. But of course, I'm not going to give myself the shout out on that because there are people that are actually doing it better. I spent a lot of time in California, just a little backstory, in Los Angeles. And every now and then, crew members and other people I work with will invite me over for a meal. I got invited to someone's house, and they served, I make a pretty good guacamole. I think I make a good guacamole. But they served an avocado cilantro hummus instead of a guacamole, and it was incredibly good. And I asked about the recipe, and the guy said that he got it from a blog. And the blog was called What's Gabby Cooking? And that's Gabby, G-A-B-Y. So whatsgabbycooking.com. And so I went and I started looking at it, and this woman, Gabby, calls herself a California girl. Now, I don't really have a lot of business trying to convert myself into a California girl, but I got into really looking at the blog in general, and I have to say that I really dig it. I like it a lot. The recipes, I've now cooked a few across several different categories. They work. They're well explained and delicious. And Gabby, and by the way, I don't even know what Gabby's last name is. I haven't met her. I don't know her. But she's got another section called Obsessed, which is about things that she's really into. Travel. She does city guides for traveling. She does entertainment tips. So it's kind of a personal brand. I'm digging what's Gabby cooking. So check that one out. All right, continuing with my my best list of 2016. I decided to jump over books and TV shows because I write cookbooks and make TV shows, so I would be lying if I like said that I didn't think mine were the best. Although there are others that are fantastic. I mean, everybody was waiting this year for Anthony Bourdain's a new book, Appetite, and it is pretty wonderful. And I continue to think that Beat Bobby Flay is one of the best food shows on TV. But I'm going to skip over that and just and go on down down my list. And this is, like I say, it's completely out of order. So I went from a food blog of the year, I went from a media award to kind of a brick and mortar award. I am going to now state the restaurant. Nope. I'm going to back up. I'm going to go with the hotel of the year. We'll hold restaurant of the year. I spend a huge amount of time traveling, and I'm incredibly picky about hotels. I think deep down, I always wanted to be a hotelier or hotelier, depending on who you ask. Kind of like Monsieur Gustave in Grand Budapest Hotel. I wanted to be both a concierge and run the hotel. And so I have this real appreciation, especially for small boutique hotels that do everything right. And of all the ones that I stayed in this year, I've got to give the hotel of the year to the Zero George Hotel, which is at Zero George Street in Charleston, South Carolina. It's made up of three early 19th century buildings that kind of form this charming yet oddly groovy enclave. And the main porch I shouldn't say the main porch because they all have porches, but the main building has this gigantic porch in the Charleston style. It is very, much of that. So it's very long and very covered. It's probably my favorite place to have a cocktail in the eastern United States, the western United States, being, of course, outside any of the bungalows at the Chateau Marmont. But I don't get to stay there very often. So the Zero George really, really amazingly terrific. It's small. I don't know how many rooms they have, but every one of them is appointed. It's like Southern, historic, but also austerely modern at the same time. The kitchen, it's really interesting. You go in the main door, you go through this gate into the little courtyard and into the check-in area, and the kitchen, which is an open kitchen, is right there. On the left is the kitchen. On the left is the kitchen, and on the right is the check-in. And that kitchen turns out some mighty good and inventive food. And I have to tell you, if you're lucky enough to stay there, go for the breakfast in the morning and steal as many of the cheddar biscuits as your suitcase can hold. I think I took 25 of them last time or something like that. They billed me for them. So just a fantastic food. The cocktails are wonderful. Restaurant's wonderful. The staff is friendlier than, I don't know, most of my friends, and the location is perfectly suited. It's like close to downtown, but not too close. It's downtown adjacent. It is very, very, just, well, around the corner from one of my two restaurants of the year, which we'll get into. So if you get a chance to go and stay at the Zero George, I'm looking up the... it's Zero George Street, and you can just go to zerogeorge.com, ZeroGeorge.com. And they also give cooking classes there, which I might do next time I'm there. So just an absolutely fantastic, fantastic hotel, my hotel of the year. Now, I said that right around the corner was one of my restaurants of the year, and I have two. I could not make up my mind. I've got two restaurants of the year, and the one that's right around the corner from Zero George on East Bay Street is 167 Raw. It's very difficult to explain Raw. It is a restaurant that there's one in Charleston. There's also one, I want to say in Nantucket or someplace like that. And the whole idea, the owners, a guy named Jesse Sandel and Kyle Norton, I think, wanted to create a very small restaurant that was all about excellence in seafood, excellent in raw food, excellent in oysters, and excellence in cooked food. And they do it, okay? They nail it. I mean, they bring in the best oysters. The crudos are incredible. But I have to say that what kind of won it for me this year was their gazpacho. They do a tomatoless gazpacho. It's actually carrot-based, and it's prepared by Chef Sean Riflin. I don't know if I'm even saying that right. Very well-known in that area. And it is the best. Listen to me. Listen. It is the best gazpacho I have ever had in my life, in my entire freaking life. And I'm a big gazpacho fan. I've had a lot of gazpacho. And I'm sorry to all the Spanish guys out there and Spanish girls that have made me gazpacho. This stuff is absolutely amazing. So go for the oysters. Go for the crudos. You're going to stand in line. They don't take reservations. Small. I don't know. Maybe 20 seats, and that includes the main bar. The other thing that's really cool about 167 Raw is that all the guys that run it, and it does seem to be all guys. Every time I've been, I haven't seen a lady working there. They're like this kind of weird culinary band of brothers. It's like they're on this mission, and they all talk to you, and they're all incredibly cool and incredibly friendly and incredibly knowledgeable and very into what they're doing. So you feel kind of like you're in a, you know, it's funny. With the color scheme and the logo on the front of the doors is an old school diving helmet. There's an interesting kind of Wes Anderson vibe going on in there that really does it for me, because you feel like you're on a crew of something. It's like being on the Belafonte in a Life Aquatic. Love the food, love the service, love the restaurant. Wish they took reservations, because sometimes the waits are very long, especially when it's hot outside. But 167 Raw is absolutely not to be missed. My second restaurant of the year, and by no means is it like second under 167 Raw, it's right up there, is a restaurant in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, called Maison. And Maison, it's M A, and then the I is in apostrophes, S-O-N. And the reason for that is that it's owned by a husband and wife team, Taylor and Leanne Mason. So it's Maison of Masons, kind of cool. And they put the I kind of in little, you know, apostrophes. I mean, brackets, parentheses. You knew what I was saying. 28 seats. So I'm big on the small restaurants this year. I went for the first time in 2015, and I went back to the area really just to eat there again this year to see what they were doing. And I have to tell you, although I I have certainly come to scoff at the whole farm to table thing. I think it's become a bit of an overused gimmick. Taylor and Leanne walk that frickin' talk. The menu is old world inspired, but only using ingredients from the surrounding area. Menu changes constantly. All they've got is a blackboard. They don't even print the menus. And the food is perfect. I like to start with a classic Leonese salad, frisée with a farm egg. But you know what? Don't skip the homemade burrata or the house-cured fish. And if at all possible, book the chef's counter. It's only two seats, which faces into the open kitchen. Usually only two line cooks back there. And watching them is very inspiring and a little intimidating because they know their stuff. Every dish that I have there is just amazing. They tend towards, I think they probably are a little better at the wintry dishes because things like, you know, polenta and stews and short ribs, braised lamb shoulder and things like that are their best. But the reason that I'm putting this on my restaurant of the year is that Taylor Mason, he's that rare chef who hasn't forgotten that his job is to serve people and make them happy while still chasing his own brand of perfection. Taylor, my hat is off to you, sir. You and your crew are absolutely the real thing. And if there's no other reason to go to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and by the way, there is. Lancaster is actually a really cool town. It's really on the kind of up and coming, great coffee scene happening there. So if you get a chance to go through, absolutely positively, do not miss Maison. And definitely, if you can eat at that chef's table, you want to do that. All right, moving on. Let's talk about coffee shop of the year. Now, anybody that's followed me on via the hashtag AB Road Eats during my live tour over the last year, really 2 years, know that I've got a coffee problem. Well, it's not really a problem as long as I don't run out of coffee. I am an enthusiast. No, it's not true. I'm an addict. I'm a coffee addict. But I'm picky. I can't just chug any old Joe. So every time I go into a town, I seek out what I think to be the best coffee or what I hope to be the best coffee. And people make recommendations all the time. And we take those off of the interwebs, off of social media, and follow up on them. And that has brought me some pretty great coffee this year. And in fact, I've decided to break this into three. Okay. I'm going to give one call out for hand pour, okay? Because that has really become a thing, and it's very different from espresso, and there are places that are trying to do it, and they're not doing a very good job. A lot of places are doing it. So I'm doing a hand pour, I'm doing an espresso, and then I'm doing an overall coffee shop based on coffee drinks, okay? Meaning drinks that aren't just coffee, but kind of augmented drinks. So we're going to do hand pour, espresso, and coffee drinks. So the first one, drum roll. I am giving up the hand pour award. No one came even close to Anthology Coffee in Detroit. It is out in the middle of nowhere. Well, that's not true. It's like in downtown, but it's like off the railroad tracks. The nearest actual road is Rosa Parks Boulevard. Now I have to say, I've become a really big fan of Detroit. Detroit is got so much good stuff going on right now. You know, 10 years, everybody thought, you know, Detroit was dead. Well, guess what? It's not. By no means is it dead. The town has bounced back big time. The food scene is on the up. And Anthology Coffee, best hand pour. I'm not going to say it's the best hand pour I ever had. It's definitely the best hand pour that I had in 2016. And what's really cool about the shop, which is tiny, is that all of the machinery, the coffee machinery, is like on an island right in the middle of the shop. So there's no like central counter to just walk up to. You kind of like can walk all the way around it, and whoever's there, you order your coffee. I think I had an Ethiopian while I was there. The temperature was perfect. The pour was perfect. The roast was perfect. The grind was perfect. The timing was perfect. It was a perfect pour of coffee. So don't miss Anthology Coffee if you are anywhere near Detroit. Anthologycoffee.com. And I'm looking at their website right now. You can actually order, let's see, it's 1401 Vermont Street, Detroit, 48216. And you can order coffee to be shipped. You know, beans, not like, you know, a cup of coffee. That would be really difficult. So go by there if you possibly can. Now, here's the espresso deal. I'm addicted to cortados. Of course, cortados, a Spanish word, means cut. It means essentially a doppio, or sometimes a double pour, a double espresso that's been cut with just a little bit of warmed milk that has been barely textured. You don't get a whole lot of foam. And I'm sorry if you're hearing the train go by. We're close to the tracks here at Brain Food Industries. So cortado is like my thing, and it's usually served in a heavy glass tumbler called a Gibraltar glass. And to me, there's something about having just a little bit of milk, textured milk, cut into that espresso that allows me to really, really taste it a little more fully. So I am giving this year's best espresso to a place in Grand Rapids, Michigan, called Rouster Coffee. That's Rouster. I don't know if it's Rouster or Roaster. I think it's Rouster Coffee. It's in what they call the, what's that district called? I should have prepared a little bit more. The Wealthy Street District. It's along Wealthy Street, which has become like it's, I don't know, it's kind of a hipster thing. So what makes Rouster so good? Well, number one, cortado, perfect. Absolutely perfect. Perfect from a temperature standpoint, perfect from the size and shape of the pour. The roast was perfect. The grind was perfect. Perfect the way that the Anthology was great in Detroit for the hand pour, except that this was a cortado. The other reason that I really love this place is the shop itself is very unlike any. Well, I mean, look, you walk in and it seems to have the regular, what we would call third world hipster coffee kind of scenario. There's, you know, dark tones and on the walls, and there's wood, and there's like some old school desks. But the thing about Rouster is it gets it right in a way that a lot don't. I'm going to tell you what that is. It's quiet. Even when it's noisy, I know that doesn't make any sense, they cultivate this kind of be cool feel. It's kind of like there aren't 1,000 people typing away on computers from the Wi-Fi. Hell, I don't even know if they have Wi-Fi. And the people that are there talking keep their voices down. So it's the absolute definition of chill. It is a chill coffee shop. And I think that in this day and age, it's really nice to be able to go into a coffee shop and have chill. So Rouster Coffee, Grand Rapids, and Grand Rapids, by the way, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Sorry, I just hit the microphone, but I'm not going to start over. Grand Rapids, really interesting town. I have found that there's kind of this whole layer of kind of second tier and tertiary or third tier cities in the United States that really have it going on. There's a really good growing food scene there. And the people are pretty gosh darn wonderful in Grand Rapids. So there was a lot of competition, but I've got to give it to Rouster. Now, my coffee drink shop of the year. And before I talk about this place, which I'm a huge fan of, I want to read a couple of things off of their menu. This place is, I don't usually like, if I go into a coffee place, it's like, I want coffee or I want a cortado. I don't want a coffee-based drink. I'm like, don't show me how clever you are. Show me how you can make coffee. And the reason for that is that a lot of coffee places that start doing more complex drinks are trying to kind of cover the fact that their coffee's not actually very good. Well, that is not the case with my coffee drink place of the year. Here's a couple of what they call augmented coffees. On the menu, they've got something called an Atlas, which is drip coffee with demerara sugar and an aromatic cream that is absolutely amazing. Hot coffee topped with a floating but cold aromatic whipped cream, but barely sweetened, a brûléed latte with what they call rested espresso. They actually believe that making any espresso drink with milk and allowing it to rest for a while makes it into a different drink, but they use a charred milk, and then they flame it with orange. These things sound to be gimmicky and hipstery. Freaking amazing. They also make an amazing coffee soda. And the place that I'm talking about is none other than Steadfast Coffee in Germantown, Nashville, Tennessee. Oh my gosh. The place, number one, it looks, you know what? It looks like if Jules Verne opened a coffee shop in like an abandoned subway station. That's the only way that I can describe it. It's like tile and wire and really cool metal. It's a place that I just found myself really wanting to be. The espressos and the coffee, the straight coffees that I had were pretty gosh darn great, but it was really these augmented coffees, this idea that they have of of kind of pushing that out, not as an excuse for not having good coffee, but as an expression of how good they are at coffee. They also have coffee cocktails. They've got one called Perth, Tennessee. I need to find out what the reference is to. Oh, Perth, because it's technically a long black, which of course is an Australian thing. So there's your Perth. Long black being, of course, a lot of people define it a lot of different ways, but typically a double puller, a doppio with hot water, but not quite like an Americano. But it's also got apple brandy in it, demerara, lemon peel. They've got another one called the Wolf Pack, which has got their own homemade coffee soda with kind of this liqueur and a bouquet garni. The stuff is just absolutely amazing. And so that gets my vote for the Coffee Drink House of the Year, Steadfast Coffee, Germantown in Nashville, Tennessee. All right, well, let's keep rolling on. Gosh, I've already eaten up 25 minutes. What do I do next? I'm looking over my list. You know what? I am going to, since we're talking about beverages, I'm going to go to my best cocktail trend of the year, or at least my favorite. And this is something that's really just starting to catch on with some of the more advanced cocktail joints, speakeasies and whatnot in larger cities. So I think it's something that's come on big this year, but we will definitely see continuing in 2017. And that is the flip. Some people thought that 2016 was the year of the flip. No, no, no. 2017 will be the year of the flip. Now, if you're not familiar, a flip is basically any of a great number of cocktails that are shaken with either a raw whole egg or, in some occasions, egg whites until it literally makes a foam. So that when it comes out of the shaker, and they do need to be shaken, not stirred, there's a foam on top, not thick like a meringue, but there's definitely a foam. Now comes out of a very old tradition. Colonial America flips were common, but they were almost always served hot, and they were stirred in that case with a red hot poker. In many cases, I can't wait to see that come up in a Quentin Tarantino movie. If it hasn't already, it might have been in Hateful Eight. I don't know. I could only watch about half of it. Anyway, the thing is that we're now seeing flips coming onto a lot of cocktail menus. And here's why. Okay, why bother with the egg? Okay, one, because it creates a foam. The foam helps to carry the more aromatic qualities of a cocktail. That is, things you are going to smell because all of those little bubbles in the foam help to carry that. The other thing is texture. Okay, by making a more viscous drink, which you do when you shake a cocktail with egg in it, it coats the tongue in a very different way, and I think brings out more subtle flavors. Also, the thicker cocktail, we tend to drink slower. Maybe that's just me, but I tend to drink one flip in the time that it would take me to drink a couple of them. Now, if you're looking for examples, I've made a lot in this year, but I've got to give it up to another food blog, which I like a lot, Food 52, who put onto their website a Negroni flip, which I wouldn't have thought of, I guess. Although gin is often used in flips, it is literally a straightforward Negroni with an egg added to it. And I made it myself, and it was kind of like, you remember Orange Julius's? Okay, an Orange Julius was basically an orange flip, okay, but without any alcohol in it. Well, imagine that, but a Negroni. And if it doesn't sound good, then I'm not doing any justice to it, because it's pretty gosh darn amazing. But I'm not going to take credit for it. If you want that recipe, just Google Food 52 Negroni flip. But I think that we are going to see a lot more flips in the coming year. And I certainly hope that people will try them at home. Please don't let your fear, if you have a fear of raw eggs, do you in. You can use pasteurized shell eggs, which are available. And to be honest, I have never known anybody that gotten salmonella from raw eggs. I never have. I've eaten them all my life. So I'm personally not going to worry about it. But truth be told, I don't think the alcohol would kill anything that's in there. But maybe if you drink enough of them, the way it works in eggnog. So that's my cocktail trend of the year. It is the flip. We will definitely be seeing more of them in 2017. My ingredient of the year, cauliflower. Again, the cruciferous cousin of the cabbage continues its campaign to conquer the entire culinary world. And you know what? That is okay with me. This year I had cauliflower nachos for the first time, General Tso's cauliflower, and of course something that probably everybody has had by now because it became huge this year. It was buffalo cauliflower instead of buffalo chicken wings, the same flavors, the hot sauce, the blue cheese, the whole kit and caboodle, except with cauliflower, which kind of makes for semi-guilt-free bar noshing. And yet, home cooks are still not as into cauliflower as they should be. You can grate it on a box grater and make something that's very much like rice out of it. I've made pilaf-like dishes out of it. You can make purees. You can roast the gosh darn thing whole. You can cut it into thick slabs and broil it like a steak. If there is something that cauliflower can't do, like, you know, operate a car, heavy machinery, stuff like that. But otherwise, cauliflower is pretty much the bomb. And by the way, my ingredient of the year last year was quinoa. And yes, some of you are going, no, it's quinoa. Well, actually it isn't. It's quinoa. But we're not going to get into that. That was last year and we're going to move on. Cauliflower, we can at least all agree on how that one is pronounced. And by the way, if you're a fan of my website, altonbrown.com, I'm going to be doing a lot more cauliflower recipes this year as I kind of expand that. Because to tell you the truth, keeping a head of cauliflower, which lasts for freaking ever if you keep it wrapped properly, in the crisper drawer is like an insurance against starvation. You can come home any night, and as long as that cauliflower is in there, by golly, you can get dinner on the plate. It all comes down to just having a good healthy pantry, which I'm hoping that you do. Anyway, we will be doing a lot more cauliflower in 2017. All right, that brings us, I'm just looking over my list. I've got one more, and it's a big one. My cooking tool of the year. Now look, I don't do endorsements, okay? And I, to the best of my knowledge, I don't think I've ever done a cooking tool endorsement. But something came out near the end of this year that I can only call revolutionary. And the reason it's revolutionary is because this device absolutely positively, just in the couple of short weeks that I've had it, and I, honest to God, I've had it less than a month, has changed the way I will cook and the foods that I will eat because of that pretty much forever. The device is a kind of a co-partnership between the appliance manufacturer Breville. And by the way, nobody's paid me to say this, okay? I want to be very clear about this. This is not an endorsement at all. I mean, it is, but not a paid endorsement. Breville got together with the guys over at Polyscience. Now, Polyscience is a very interesting company. They make lab equipment, but they also are the company responsible for making most of the immersion circulators that American chefs use for their sous vide. That, of course, is a device that you put into a water bath or some other liquid, and you can set a very, very specific temperature, and that device will keep that water bath at that temperature, and then you put food in a sealed bag, and you put it in there, and you can cook it at a very, very exact temperature. Well, now, Breville and Polyscience have come together to make a tool called the Control Freak. The Control Freak is amazing. It is an induction, a freestanding countertop induction cooking hob, as the English call them, a burner, an induction burner. Now, for those of you that aren't familiar with induction, you need to. Induction doesn't create heat. It creates an electromagnetic wave in the cookware itself so that the cookware gets hot. It actually uses waves to heat the cookware. And then the device itself gets hot, but only by conduction with the pot. It requires pots and pans with a very specific ferrous content. Needs to be more iron in it than regular stainless steel. Most of the better companies, like certainly Allclad, are making induction-friendly vessels. But cast iron is also probably the best thing for induction because of the high iron content. If a magnet sticks to it, basically the rule is it can cook on induction. Okay, so this device has a sensor in the middle of it that feels the bottom of the pot, okay? So that it knows exactly, precisely how hot the pot is. And you can then dial in the exact temperature that you want that vessel. Say you want to scramble your eggs at 90 degrees centigrade, which is what a lot of fancy European chefs do because it makes a very light, fluffy egg. You can dial it in and know that that pan will be exactly 90 degrees. Gone are the days of looking at the heat controls on your cooktop and just, you know, choosing between low, medium, and high, or 1, 2, 3, 8. Those numbers don't mean anything, right? So, you know, we learn to kind of look at the gas flame and kind of judge where it is, or on electric, you're just screwed. There's no way of knowing. Well, now you can actually dial it in, and the device will pulse on and off, turn itself on and off, and control its heat in order to maintain that temperature no matter what you do with the pan. Now, it also has, get this, a remote heat sensor. Well, it's not remote. You plug it into the side that you can stick into, and it's got a really snazzy thing to pop onto the side of a pot. Say that you want to fry. Let's say we're going to fry French fries. Now, when you fry French fries or anything else, you heat the oil to a certain temperature. You've got to have a thermometer in there. And then when you add the food, typically the temperature drops. So you've got to boost the heat to get the temperature back up so that the food's not oily. Well, the control freak, I love that name, by the way, has a probe that you plug in. You set the temperature that you want that oil, and that's where it stays. Or let's say you want to poach a piece of fish in broth. You just set the temperature that you want the fish to be when it's finally cooked, say 130 degrees or whatever, and the liquid will be held at that temperature. Guessing is over. There's no more guessing about the temperature of a pot, a pan, or the liquid in it, no matter whether it is water or oil. I have cooked almost every day with the thing since getting it, and I'm gobsmacked. I can't say enough. I can't find anything wrong with it. I can't find anything it doesn't do well. I decided, I want some guacamole. So I made guacamole, and I'm like, I want some chips. Well, you know what? I'll fry my own. So I got some tortillas out. I cut them up. I set the thing to 375. It got up to heat in about 7 minutes, and I never had to look at the temperature. I did the chips in four batches, and the temperature never wavered more than a degree. The downside. It's $1,800. Yes, the Control Freak is $1,800 currently. I feel certain that the price will go down, and they'll probably make a lighter weight version just for home cooks. But let me say this. It's freaking worth it. I would do without a lot of things in my life to have this device. Now that I've got it, I don't know that I want to do without it. And to tell you the truth, if you had two of them, I'm not sure you need a cooktop anymore. I'm serious. I could see designing a kitchen without a cooktop. Give me a wall oven and two of these units and I might be done. So revolutionary, life-changing, really freaking expensive, but it gets my Nobel Prize of the year for tools, and that's it. I'm not gonna bring it up again because I don't want to sound like an endorsement. But all I'm gonna say is I've got two, and you can't freaking have them. Okay. Well, all right. That wraps up my list. The only other thing is I want to say is that the best thing about 2016 is that it's over now. I don't know about you guys. 2016 made me think a lot. The people that we lost in 2016, aren't easy to replace. Bowie, Prince. I mean, Leonard Cohen died, but gosh, the guy was in the 80s. You can't fault him for it. But a lot of great people went, and we got a lot to step up for. You know, we need to do better. Everybody, we need to work harder. We need to think clearer. We need to create more passionately in the honor and in the name of those that we lost. Stop complaining. Things may have happened in 2016 that you didn't like. Okay, let's get on with it. We're America, and we know what we need to do. And sometimes we have to reevaluate ourselves, and we have to look at the world we live in, and we have to rethink where we are in it and what we do in it. So take some time, maybe not a lot, but take a little time and think about what you're going to do in 2017. Make a difference. Make it count. This is Alton Brown signing off from Brain Food Industries in Marietta, Georgia. Happy New Year, everybody.